The Franchise Geeks present Social Geek Radio. Hello, geeks. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey and Franchise Dictionary Magazine. Today, it's episode 5 of season 10 of Social Geek Radio. And I've got a quick favor to ask. If you like what we're doing here, please leave us a review at the iTunes store and be sure to tell a friend about us. We do appreciate you. Okay, today we're jumping into brand strategy with Fabian Geierhalter. Fabian is a renowned brand strategist and the founder and principal of Finian, a Los Angeles-based consultancy specializing in brand clarity. He works with high-growth startups and some of our favorite established brands like Warner Brothers, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and W Hotels. Fabian is also a columnist for Inc. and Forbes and has been published in The Washington Post, Mashable, Entrepreneur, and The Huffington Post. His book, How to Launch a Brand, is a number one Amazon bestseller, and his newest book is called Bigger Than This, How to Turn Any Venture into an Admired Brand. Love that title. And he joins us right now on Social Geek Radio. Welcome, Fabian.
So good to be here. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm really fascinated by the idea of turning a venture into an admired brand. And I'm really, really fascinated by your concept of branding being the new advertising. Tell us more about that. How did we get here?
Well, see, brand communications really changed from being advertising-based to being human-based. And I clearly remember when I started writing my latest book, which you mentioned, it was the Saturday before Halloween. I remember that. And it came to me as I saw the mayhem ensue outside of my window with, you know, all the kids dressing up and everyone trying to be someone else. It came to me that dressing up for Halloween is such a great analogy for how many educated consumers see branding, right? They see fake personas that are being crafted to evoke emotions from usually a very specific audience in order to achieve whatever the predetermined goal of the brand is. And so that approach is so on its way out. Like, that is so yesterday. It's like today, brands just opt for complete transparency and engaging open conversations. And, you know, obviously, you know, on a show like yours, it's obvious that that is because of the rise of social media. And suddenly there's also a new generation that is ready to participate. As long as the brand's approach is inclusive and amicable, right, they have to come in peace to that conversation. But we will see this trend of empathetic branding continue on. And I think that there's going to be a lot of Fortune 500s who have not jumped onto that boat yet. They will struggle. They will struggle to adapt to that new era. And there's this quote that I just saw the other day. I mean, obviously it's a quote that's been around for a while, but it's by Albert Einstein. And it is so perfect for this idea of branding being the new advertising. He said, try not to become a man of success, rather become a man of value. And that's really what successful brands understand today. They give in order to receive. So they listen in order to be heard, and they're part of that conversation rather than talking top down to an audience with, you know, some fake advertising. So in a long-winded answer to your quick question, I feel like that's why branding is the new advertising.
I love that idea of a brand becoming a brand of value. And then I guess the idea is success will just follow. If you have value, if you give value to your customers, you will be successful. Is that right?
That's right. And I mean, that can be for a service brand, that can be, you know, sharing ideas, you know, teaching you something, and being part. It's about shared. It's not about only about sharing values. It's about shared values, right? That we all, like you and your tribe, you and your brand's customers, members, consumers, you share the same vision for even just the tiniest thing in life, right? And once you have that same vision, then you can just you can educate, and even better than that, you can edutain, right? So you educate in an entertaining way, and then everyone will listen, and oh, PS, we have a product to sell. But that kind of becomes that becomes the new norm, that they would just seek your product because they align with your values.
You mentioned that that the rise of social media may be one of the causes of this this increased importance on value and transparency, it kind of feels to me, and tell me if this is where you were going with this, like we are in a behind the scenes culture. Everything we actually see about a brand is really behind the scenes, whether it's, you know, a Facebook video or some Instagram posts, that really behind the scenes at any brand is really what people are looking for. And that's what we're seeing the most of for these successful brands. Is that what you see Fortune 500 companies maybe not doing so well these days?
Yeah, because they're behind the stage. You know, it's like they're orchestrating, yeah. Right? Yeah. And right. And so I think now with, you know, with Instagram Live and with, you know, with everything being so 100% true to who these people are behind the brand, right? It becomes personable. That's what happens with startups today. And I think that's it's so easy for a startup to have an intrinsic belief and to just kind of like put yourself out there and be very amicable and natural, because it is only one or two founders, right? Five people in a room, you know, packing and shipping products.
And they have nothing to lose, right?
They probably don't have a huge budget, right?
So
that's exactly right. And if it doesn't work for them, they can just, you know, resurface under a new brand name tomorrow and try the whole thing again. But it's all about conversations. It's all about storytelling, and it's all about conversations. And all of that needs to come back down to like, you know, like one intrinsic belief that you share with your audience. And it is so difficult for large, you know, Fortune 500s, Fortune 5000s even, to start going back to their founding elements and founding story and kind of like to relive that and infuse that into their brand now that it has been shaded by advertising and by kind of like that top-down approach for so long. They really have to reinvent themselves.
Do you see larger established brands, maybe Fortune 500s, that are looking at startups and trying to act like a startup or at least look like they're acting like a startup when it comes to trying to show this kind of value?
Every single one of them. Every single one of them. For them, it's very much like digital transformation. On the one hand, if they don't transform digitally as a business, they're in deep trouble. On the other hand, if they don't connect with today's consumer, then it is the exact same thing. So either they start gobbling up startups for their digital transformation, and on the other hand, they start hiring the next generation, trying to figure out how do we talk that talk, and they hire brand strategists like myself to say, like, how can we reinfuse that brand gold, that magic that we had into our brand today, and how can we live those values and make sure that people start seeing that? They do look at all of the disruptive startups because they take a huge market share away from them. I mean, in consumer products, you can see direct to consumer brands right and left that come in and they're challengers. It's very serious challengers.
Yeah. And I think they're challenging brands that have turned into, and they probably wouldn't admit this because every brand thinks that they have some great value or secret, but so many brands have turned into a commodity. How are the brands you're working with standing out and rising above sort of that commodity base?
Yeah, so I studied a wave of startups that offer really so what type of product, right? There's absolutely no innovation. There's nothing new. There's not even tech, right? Which we just talked about how today's startups have all of these advantages and be so nimble. But they only have, you know, like pretty boring so what type of, you know, product offerings. And yet they did not only succeed in this highly saturated market, but they actually skyrocketed into admired brands. So while I reviewed these amazing startups with really boring products, I realized that what they got right is that they knew that they needed to find a story that is bigger than their offering, right? Because their offering isn't that amazing. So in my latest book, in Bigger Than This, I analyzed that all of these ventures actually lead with branding rather than product. So by using empathy with their audience, they found ways to tell bigger stories that immediately resonated with their new audiences. And so those stories can be based on shared values, as we discussed. They can be strong beliefs that they share. It can be heritage, you know, Shinola, you know, the company. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only Detroit. That's the only reason for the company to exist, right? It could be individuality. You know, I can give you a few examples. And one, yes, I think will really resonate with your audience.
Yes, let's hear it.
Okay. One of them is the chain of gyms, of fitness centers called Planet Fitness. And I think a lot of your listeners might be familiar with Planet Fitness.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They have these great franchise system.
Great franchise system. Exactly. And they really turned into a large, large franchise system by excluding the many to gain the few. Right. So they basically said, look, all gyms are all about, you know, you being, you know, you having a six pack and being buff and, you know, like you, you know, you pumping iron, as they call it, right? And doing your protein. And quite frankly, most of us are not that person. I mean, most of us just want to get by, you know, we want to make sure that we live a fairly healthy life. And we just want to go to the gym once a week, twice a week, and just kind of like make sure that, you know, our body is intact. And so they created these judgment-free zones, and their motto of "we don't judge," it sounds so silly and it sounds like such a little marketing thing, but I mean, they opened themselves up to such a huge market. I think by now they have over 6 million members, maybe more than that by now, right? Mm-hmm. But they use that brand trait of solidarity, right? That's all it is. It's like, you know, we're in this with you 100%, right? We're talking our talk. If you come in and you want to pump iron and you're one of those guys, well, sorry, this is not for you. And there's, you know, there's a huge controversy around that they really exclude people in their tribe. But that's how you get bigger than your offering. You know, like you have to actually find this shtick and then 100% be behind your audience. Another brand that many might not be as familiar with, it's the direct-to-consumer clothing brand called Everlane. And they have something that they call radical transparency. And so what that young brand does is it actually shares the origins all the way to the production costs of their garments with the shoppers. Like they tell you every single thing about what they offer, right? So this is the factory where it came from. This is the person who worked on it. This is how much it cost us to produce this. And what that means is that, first of all, people can trust a brand that's transparent, right? Because transparency equals trust. So right. From the get-go, they don't even have to do anything yet. They just have to talk about this online, and people come to the site and say, oh my God, I mean, they're so transparent, I have to trust them. And then what happens is if they actually lower production costs on a certain sweater, for instance, let's say they save $25 because they shaved that off their production cost, they have to be transparent and hand that over to the customers. So they can just write an email saying, hey, our best-selling item now, you know, that cashmere sweater or whatever it may be, it's now $25 off forever because we realized how to produce them cheaper. And I mean, that is unheard of, talking about Fortune 500s and how, you know, how it is amazing for a company like Everlane to come in and say, we can do that because we don't have shareholders. You know, we don't have that board of directors to report to. We can actually give that money to our customers because we're all about transparency. And that's how you create a tribe, you know, and those are, I mean, Planet Fitness as an example, Everlane as an example, but those are all remarkable and consistent brand moves, right? I can keep going on and on, but it's these little, it's these ideas, it's really these simple brand ideas, and then you start infusing it and you just go all the way.
What I love about the Everlane example, and I was not familiar with them whatsoever, but what I love about what you're saying there is, along with showing how something's made or why they do something one way or another, they're actually telling the story. They're telling a story about themselves and about their customers and about the people who are making the product. So it opens itself up to a lot of storytelling that isn't the kind of phony storytelling that I'm really getting tired of, you know, where, you know, it's our founders came together in 1962 and started, and, you know, and it's very contrived. But yeah. But you know, the Everlane type story, where it's actually the story of the product and the value that the customer is going to get out of the product, I don't know if this would have worked 30 years ago, but we're kind of in this perfect space right now where people want to hear those stories. And it's easy to tell those stories through all of the channels we have available.
Exactly. And I think that should come as a big sigh of relief for a lot of, you know, smaller, mid-sized companies where they say, oh, wow. I mean, actually, if we only tell the story, which most of them already have an amazing story and they live up to great values and they have great staff that all care about something. And if you start aligning all of that and sharing that with your customer, that can actually give you so much more, you know, return on your investment than if you book a couple of ads. that is beautiful for any small business to hear.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming year. We've just kicked off 2019. What do you see happening with brands in this space and how they're telling that story in 2019?
I think like most of these, you know, movements in advertising or marketing, they take time. So I think that we just saw the beginning of that. I really think that in 2019, we will see more transparency, even from bigger companies. There will be more empathy between you know, customers and consumers and the brand. I also think we will even get more political. You know, I think that even you know, bigger brands will have to become more political. And we've seen that last year with Nike and with Starbucks and, you know, the usual suspects like Patagonia. But in short, I think that in 2019, brands will become part of society rather than your TV screen or billboard. You know, I very much, you know, think that, again, that idea of digital transformation, it's you know, very much like that. It's a move to be bigger than your offering. And I think that will mark many businesses obsolete if they don't find their way to be a part of that new way that brands behave and communicate.
And be a part of a national or a global conversation as well. I agree with you about becoming more political. That used to be just taboo, that you never wanted to talk politics or take a side on any issue. But I think that's the past. I think we're beyond that now, and Nike and other brands have made it so we can't really go back. You know, you have to take a stand on some issues one way or another. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out as well. Fabian, we've got just a few minutes left. I want to talk about some advice you would give startup owners. You talk about turning a venture into an admired brand. If you were to sit down with some startup owners today, what would you tell them is sort of their first step in becoming an admired brand?
It's a great question. I feel that a startup has to have soul, right? You know, it has to be attractive. It has to be smart, right? Obviously, the design has to be great. The brand's usability has to be great. All of this is super important. But without soul, you are solely relying on product and price or constant innovation. And that we all know how difficult it is to compete on, you know, on innovation and price.
Yeah.
So infusing your startup early on with soul, which is really brand strategy, really, you know, thinking about, you know, the big why behind the brand, it's a layer of insurance for a company of any size, but especially startups, to not compete on price. So the idea that if you have heart and soul and your customers, your clients connect to that even more so than your product, and your product becomes secondary. Your product could be a dollar more expensive in the app store than another product, and they still buy yours. Your shoes may be $10 more, and they still buy yours because you're Toms, because they care about giving one pair to people in need. That's the idea. They can't steal that. See, competitors can't steal that from a startup. They can steal everything else. They can steal your IP. They can steal your employees. They can disrupt your tech. They can offer your product, you know, to a lower price. But it's that brand DNA, that string that goes through your brand, that secret sauce, right? If you're able to answer questions like, why would my audience deeply care about this? You know, like, how do I tell a bigger, relatable, sustainable story, you know, that can turn me into a brand that people would really, really admire, you know, and why do I and my employees, especially as a startup, devote all my time to this offering where I know there's a huge chance it might fail because startups, you know, a lot of them do, you know, why do I do this? And then focus more on that answer to that why than to creating that perfect product that has, you know, 15 more features that it might not even need.
Yeah. And those features are not important to anyone but the startup owners. The customers probably don't care about all 15 of those features. I love that idea of owners asking themselves, why would someone use us or buy our products or want to do business with us rather than someone else? That's a great question to start with. A quick note, today's episode has been brought to you by Franchise Dictionary Magazine. The February issue is coming soon, focusing on children's brands and education franchises. Check it out at franchisedictionarymagazine.com. That's franchisedictionarymagazine.com. Okay, Fabian, in the minute we have left, if our listeners have some questions for you or they'd like to dig in a little bit more on some of the things you're talking and writing about these days, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
They can go to finian.com, F-I-N-I-E-N.com. That's my consultancy. If they like some of the conversation that we had, I think there's much more in my latest book, and that's biggerthanthis.com. And I just launched a podcast too, which they might be enjoying if they're interested in brands and brand storytelling. And it's called hittingthemarkpodcast.com.
Excellent. And I will have links to all of those places on the socialgeekradio.com website and Facebook pages as well. Fabian, thanks so much for joining us today on Social Geek, and we look forward to chatting again with you very soon.
Thank you, Chuck. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and good night, everybody.